Hi, everybody. Welcome to Cloud Cover. My name is Chris Reisner, and today I'm joined by the new co-host of Cloud Cover, Hashi Bai.
Hi again. I said hi again. There's a particular reason for this. If you want to find out, send Chris an email.
And today we have a very special guest, Parmita Mehta. Parmita, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Parmita. I am in the Azure Machine Learning team, and I'm here to talk to you about Azure Machine Learning Preview, which was announced in July last month. It's available for you to play with, and I wanted to show off Azure ML a little bit.
Great. Well, Hashi and I are both really excited about Cloud ML. We haven't had a lot of time to play with it, so we're really excited to see what you're going to show us.
Yeah.
So if you look at my screen, we are on we are at studio.azureml.net, and this is completely hosted in a browser environment. This is a managed service, which all you need to access the service is a live ID and a browser, so no installation required. And this is the environment where you would be creating and playing with your machine learning models. So
do they do people need to do something before they can come here? Do they need to go to the Azure portal first, something like that?
If you have an Azure subscription, you need nothing else but the live ID that you use for your Azure portal. But if you don't have one, you can get a free trial from Azure, and that's all you need.
Great.
So once you're here, studio.azureml.net, this is where you go to sign up. You can always go to Machine Learning Center, which is right off of microsoftazure.com/ML, and you'll be able to get all the information you need about getting started, tutorials, helps, videos, everything is up there for you, including forums, blogs.
Great, and we'll make sure the links to those are down beneath the video.
Excellent. And this is where you come into a studio, which is I'll be referring to this as to ML Studio throughout the conversation. And this is the homepage, so to speak, which is the collection of those very links that we talked about. So once you're in here, this is basically your sandbox to play with. And like in Word, everything has to happen in a document. In ML Studio, everything has to happen in an experiment.
So before you kind of get into that, can you kind of give us a really quick explanation of kind of what machine learning is? Like, what was the idea here?
The idea behind machine learning is how to detect patterns in large amount of data, so you can use that data and the intelligence from that to predict what is going to happen when you get new information.
So you're going to tell the future?
Yes.
Fantastic. This is going to be really useful.
This is your personal crystal gazing ball here, so you can create your own. Okay, so experiments. First thing first, there's, you go to plus new. Any time you build an experiment, any time you build a predictive model, you need a starting data set because you need to learn from something, right? So I'll show you how to get data from other sources, but you can always upload data from your local machine. So you go into local machine, upload a new data set. You support a whole list of formats here, CSV, tab separated, plain text. And there's other things like zip file and R, which we'll talk about in a moment. So let's go in and create a new experiment. So once you say you created an experiment, you come into this space which has three sections. On left, you have all these modules. In the middle, you have a canvas. And on right, you have a properties pane. And the way to start is you pull the modules into the central canvas and start building your experiment. So let's start with a data set. This data set is called the Adult Census Income Information. This is from census that was this is from a U.S. Census, and it's available off of the University of California Irvine dataset repository. So it's a public dataset, which is already included in here. So I just dragged that dataset in here, and you can just look at the dataset. So the basic thing you want to do first when you have a dataset is take a look at this. What does this data look like? So here's the number of rows, number of columns, what each of these rows are. At top, you see the distribution for these values, whether it's a string, it's a numeric, does it have missing values, how many unique values, what's the mean, median, max, standard deviation for the data. So the distribution, usual stuff.
So this is just basic analysis of whatever the data set you uploaded was.
Yeah, it's a visual analysis of the basic data set that you have. Now, the interesting thing in here is we're going to use this to build a model. So what is this data set about? This is a whole bunch of demographic information about people. And at the end, you have this column called income. And this is two values. Is the income going to be less than 50K or more than 50K annual income? And it takes all of these attributes and attributes in machine learning, we often call them features. So you'll see me use the word features, that's what I mean. It's basically each of these values that it uses to build a model that'll predict if a person is gonna make less than 50K or more than 50K.
So in this situation, you know, we've got the census data which tells us if they make less than 50 or more than 50, but the idea being that we could make some complicated or advanced model which doesn't have that answer and will then just tell us for it.
That's fantastic. So what happens in machine learning, there's two class of models, right? You have supervised models and unsupervised models. Supervised models are which you are given the answer, mm-hmm. and you use from that answer to learn what the pattern is between the answer and the other attributes that are available. Unsupervised, you don't really have an answer. Some people came on your site and they browsed a bunch of things and they bought X things. So what are the things that people tend to buy together? You don't have a correct answer for that, right? If I watched X movies, what movie am I likely to buy to watch next? Not a right or wrong answer, but it's really clustering that information. And in that, those kind of models are called unsupervised models.
Okay.
We have a bunch of algorithms here that we built in. So there's supervised, there's classification, which is it category A, category B, category C, regression, give me a number at the end, and clustering, which is for the unsupervised things like market basket and recommendation.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
All right, so we are going to build a model here. Typically in machine learning, you want to start with the data set and then you want to split that into test and training. So we are going to do that here. I want to use 75% of the data as training data and 25 as test. And I've done on the right column here, I've specified what that looks like. And now we're actually going to build a model.
So the idea with the training and the test is that you use the training data to actually train your model, and then you can use the test data to validate that it's actually correct.
That's right. So you want to test whether the model is good or not on data that it's never seen.
Okay.
Right? Because if it's seen the data, it's probably going to predict the right thing. So you want to test it on data it's never seen.
So what are some of the things the pieces you've dragged out here?
Yes. So first thing is you have this module called train module, which has two input pins, as you call them. One of that takes a data set. So in split, remember we split it to 75%, so we're going to connect this to this one. And then we are going to connect an algorithm to the other one. And for this, you want to go into the machine learning section of the modules. If you go in here, this machine learning, remember we are doing classification. And in this case, we have two classes. We are trying to predict if this person makes or this entity makes less than 50K or more than 50K. So it's a two class. We also might have multi-class where you're doing A, B, or C, colors, whatever else. So in this case, we just pick out this algorithm, which is a two class algorithm. And you connect it to the left pin, and to the right you have the data. Then the next thing you want to do after it's after it's trained is how well did it do? So now you take the test data and connect it to here, and the train data to connect the scored model. After it's done, you want to run some stats off of it to see how effective it was. You see this, that's how you would basically build the experiment flow. Now you see in the train model, there's this value required, red icon. This needs to know which value are you trying to predict. We haven't told it. You've given it a data set, but you haven't really told it what you're trying to build, right? Mm-hmm. So let's go back in here. And you'll see the column that we're trying to predict is income, which is the 15th column. So I'll go in here to train model, launch the column selector, column index, 15, yes. And I'm ready to go. So I'm going to hit run, and it's queued the experiment, and now it's going to start running the experiment. So what's happening in the background, it's going to take the data, split it into two cases, use a particular algorithm that we've given it, and build a model, and then score that model against the test data, and then show us the result here in a bit.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is really, really impressive. This is really intuitive. Basically, you don't need to understand any algorithm or how to be a data scientist. Basically, you just drag this very simple workflow, then you can get some result out.
Most of the data science is really a workflow. It's really a set of transformations that you might do on the data, set of changes that you want to bring and test. Now this environment does help you do that a lot faster. So see, our experiment is done running. Let's take a look at what it shows us. So what you see here is, I'm gonna look at the numbers first and then we'll go to the graph. What we have here in these four numbers is what we call a confusion matrix. Now, if you suppose if it's trying to predict less than 50K, more than 50K, and it's going to take one of them as true and one of them as false. Classification, 0-1, right?
Sure.
So it said that it correctly predicted 1,268 of the values. They were actually true, and it predicted true. Mm-hmm. And it correctly predicted 5,237 of the negative values. But it predicted 600 of the values as negative, and they were actually positive. And 400 of them were actually predicted as positive, and they were negative. So this is basically starting to give you an idea of how good the algorithm is doing. There's basic metric of accuracy, which is given the number, given the number of predictions it made, how many of them were correct. And this has other statistical measures, such as precision and recall and F1 scores. Now, if you take a look at this graph here, this is called the ROC curve. If everything was perfect and it got everything right, what this graph would look like is it would go all the way up this vertical and this, and then horizontal. So the area under the curve would be 1, mm-hmm. right? Now this line right here is what we call a random model. If you just took a coin and flipped it, half the time it would come heads, half the time it would come tails, and that's what a model would look like if it actually was closer to this. So you do want a model that's got more area under the curve than less. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's really a measure of how well the model's doing. So this allows you to look at that.
So now that we've seen this, like, would you go back and then somehow enhance or make your algorithm better?
Absolutely. So we go in here and say, I'm not sure if this is the best model for me, so I'm going to pull this here. And all I did was copy and paste. Then I'm going to take this particular connector, delete it, and bring in another algorithm and see if I can do any better. So I'm going to bring in a decision jungle and connect it. Rest of the values remain the same, and I want to evaluate them in the same module. You see this has two pins, so I can compare these two evaluations together.
So decision jungle, that's fantastic. It's a technical term, right?
It is very technical, okay. Yeah. It's basically an ensemble that's built on multiple decision trees, but you don't need to know that. All it's doing right now is it's going and rerunning those. Now, what you'll notice is as the running finishes, you see this green tick that appears next to the module that's been running. You saw that these got the green ticks really fast, and that really happened because we didn't change anything in this part of the experiment. So we save your states as you're being charged for the CPU that's being used or the compute that's being used at the back. We're always trying to make sure that if nothing changes, we don't charge you for it.
Makes sense.
So this is wonderful. You actually have two modules running simultaneously against the same training set. Mm-hmm. Then you can compare them side by side.
That's right. And as soon as it's done, we'll be able to see the ROC curves, the accuracy, and all of that for both of these models and decide which one of these does better.
So that's the experimental part. You're building this module. And I guess next you will talk about what you'll do after you have this module?
Yes. So 1 in 3, as I say, 1 in 3 models actually built never see light of day. It means they're never operationalized. They just stay in someone's machine built into this wonderful model, but never get actually put into production so that they can help the business value. Let's take a look at this, and then we'll talk about mm-hmm. operationalization. So what we do here is, once we have built this, we just allow you to one-click operationalize or deploy the model, and we can talk about it in a second. So here, you can see that the decision jungle is actually not as good as the boosted decision tree, just by the area under the curve. And you can see the accuracy for this, when I selected this, is about 85%, and accuracy for this is 86%. Accuracy may not be the best measure you want, but there's a whole lot of other measures that are available, so you can evaluate exactly what you want mm-hmm. here. But it was really, really simple to just drag, drop, copy, add another module, and now you have a comparison.
Yeah.
It took you very little time, and data science has it's an iterative process. The whole visual drag and drop interface makes it hopefully really, really easy for you to build these workflows.
Presumably another thing you can do to get better results is actually provide more data, right?
Yes. More data, different data, try a combination of algorithms. There's lots of different things that you can try.
Great.
We provide a whole list of algorithms here free of charge, and the thing to know is that most of these algorithms are actually developed in MSR and are internally used in Xbox, Kinect, and Bing. So you're getting the same high-class models that Microsoft uses internally to be able to build your own machine learning models.
Very cool.
Wonderful.
So we were going to talk about publishing. So this is done. Now we actually built a great model. We decided the Boosted Decision Tree was a better model. You go to the Train Model module, and you click on this, and now you can save the train model. And you provide it a name. I'm going to use today's date to save that model. So that model is now saved for me. And I'm going to now create another experiment, just like another document, to actually create a web service experiment. Now, I have this previously created, so I'm just going to show you what I have. So in a model where you're trying to publish a web service, the thing to know is there's going to be values coming in, and you're going to score those values and have a result come out, right? So the big thing here is once you set this model up, you take a score model and you attach it to the train model that you had just saved. And the right port, which normally you would have connected with the data, you set it as the input port. And the output port is obviously the model, the port that's coming out of here, and you set that as a publish that as an output port. And after that, you run the experiment and you publish the service, and you're ready to go. I have additional things here because I was doing other stuff, mucking around. You don't need it there, but this is basically the requirement. You need a train model, you need to have a score model, and you need to publish an input and output port. And once you're done, run your model, press publish, and it will publish a service for you.
So once you have the service published, essentially there will be two endpoints. One for you to post data to it. The other is to call the service to get a result out of it.
It only has one endpoint. It has one endpoint.
Okay.
But you publish the data and it comes out. But we need to tell it where the data is coming out from.
Okay.
So right,
okay.
It's internal. It's not exactly the HTTP port you're pointing here. It's input and output port. So that we tell the service what data comes, which data schema to use for input and output. So that's really what we're doing here.
Okay.
So we publish two kinds of service by default. One is a request response service, and the other one is a batch execution. Request response is real time. I send it data for one person, and it'll give me yes, no, 50K, less than 50K, more than 50K.
Mm-hmm.
Batches, I give it a whole file of things, and it'll actually go through that, score them, and save them back. Now I can save them back to Azure, Blob Storage, or SQL, or wherever I need to.
Okay.
Let's take a look at the API page. Once the service is built, it gives you an OData endpoint, gives you a request URI, tells you what the headers look like, and all of the variables that you need to provide to it. It gives you a JSON sample request, and it also provides you sample code in C#, Python, and R that you can basically cut paste into your own application when you're building using this web service.
So you mentioned R. What is R?
R is the most popular language used by data scientists today to actually create these programs. This, we support R natively. So what we have here is, I'll show you, we have a module called execute R. And all you gotta do here is you bring this module in here. And this port in here will actually show you how to connect the input port, the data that you connected these input port, into variables, and then you can have a simple R script that you were running in R Studio or any other R environment, and you can run it here. And
so if I'm already a data scientist doing stuff in R, it can be really easy for me to take that over and start running it in
CloudML.
Perfect.
Absolutely. The whole point is that you don't have to modify any of the, learn new skills or modify this. We support this, and we support about 400 packages, and every day that list is growing of R in the runtimes that we have in our service.
Very cool.
So back to the API, is that an open API that anybody can call, or just authentication?
It requires an access key. Open API would be really great. You'd be DOSed before you know it, right? There's an access key required that you can share, and the sample code actually shows you how to use it.
You knew that was a loaded question.
You can't have an open key, open endpoint anymore.
Just checking.
No, if you wanted to, you could.
Okay.
It's your choice. You know, if you wanted to take that risk, you'd obviously take that, but by default, we provide you an access key.
Okay.
But you could put this behind something like API management then and expose it out to customers if they wanted to
Absolutely.
Use it or anything you might want to do.
Absolutely. You could actually create a whole series of these web services. And the way we think about it is you have a lot of data coming from sensors, from phones, from all kinds of devices, and you bring that data up and then pass it to this request response service, and in real time you get an answer back. Now you could take that answer and predict and build a dashboard or a Power BI console or whatever to actually look at this data and say, how are things changing and trending in real time, if you want it. But it does enable a lot of different scenarios.
Very cool.
One more thing that I wanted to show you was how you could actually share this workspace. So remember we said you come into studio.ml and you get a workspace provision for you? Mm-hmm. You can actually invite other people in your team. You can basically give them and provide a live ID. Now, they are not being charged for it, so you can invite anyone to them, mm-hmm. but it needs to be a live ID. Just give a live ID, and that particular person will receive an email with the right link, and they can use that link to access your workspace.
So do these people need to have the Azure subscription as well?
No. They just need
just
a live ID. It's your Azure subscription they're using.
I see. But they can come into the same workspace and collaborate on the
That's
work.
Right. They yeah. can run your experiments, and you can always choose how to do this. You can choose them to be users or owners.
Now I can make experiments, Hashi, and then you can go in and fix them and make them actually work.
That sounds great.
I will just drag all the modules and run them in parallel. Eventually, there will be a best one.
Of course. So this is in preview right now. What is the pricing like for
Pricing is you bring your own storage account with it, and we charge you for the CPU or the compute that's used in running the experiments and running the prediction service.
Okay, great. And as you pointed out earlier, it looks like you guys have some stuff built in to kind of prevent overuse. Like if the data hasn't changed, you're not going to rerun the experiment, sort of thing.
There are some safeguards that you don't suddenly charge a lot of things and they don't start happening.
Got my eye on you, Hashi.
Are you going to do that? Like, if you do that, your experiment will take a long time to run because you won't be able to run them all in parallel, 1,000 modules.
Well, if I'm using Chris's subscription,
doesn't matter, right?
Yeah, don't worry that much.
Right. Very cool. So where can people go if they have more questions, or is there a forum for the machine learning stuff?
Yes. So azure.com/machine learning will take you to the Azure Machine Learning page, off of which you'll find a link for Machine Learning Center, or you can go to azure.com/MLDS, which will take you to Machine Learning Center directly. And this features a whole, this will provide you links to a blog, which we are very actively posting new things on. There's a forum where you can ask any questions, and the product team monitors this forum, so you should get your answer pretty quickly there. We have a lot of instructional videos. We have a series of videos that take you right from introduction to actually building a service and deploying it in production. There's a bunch of featured models in different verticals where you can come in and see, hey, if I wanted to do flight delay prediction sample, how does that look? And it actually shows you what that experiment graph looks like, and then there's details, and you can go into the ML Studio and actually play with that in there. There's a lot of tutorials, and guides also available to you to learn as much as you need from here. And if you have a question, put a note in the forum, and we'll come and make sure that your question gets answered.
Mm-hmm. Great, very cool stuff.
So for the common use cases, I guess, for one, if you're ISV, you're developing a website, if you want to have some recommendation engine in the website, you can actually provision this ML service mm-hmm. on the site and just feed your data to it. Then you get your recommendation engine without much effort, essentially.
That's right.
But on the other hand, if you have a wonderful module, you can predict things correctly, maybe you can just hold a service and resell that service by itself.
That's right. There's a lot of different models that this enables. You can actually build services on top of it that people can consume your own prediction service, your mm-hmm. own prediction API that you build on top of it, or you could use it as a part of your own infrastructure to the verticals in which this can be used are endless. You can use this in any vertical where you have a lot of sensor data coming in, so utilities, in IoT, all kinds of event hub. You have this data being collected, and then you can throw this data to a request response service that you've built on static data. Then you have retail is one of the best understood use cases of machine learning, but manufacturing, predictive maintenance, fraud detection, all of these are prime cases for you to build a model and be able to use them in your existing applications.
Yeah.
So are you guys going to go back and start using this?
Absolutely.
Excellent.
Make the Hashi prediction engine.
Yes.
Perfect. Well, Pramila, thank you so much for coming on. It's really great to see the Cloud ML stuff in action, and I've enjoyed learning about it. Hashi, thanks as always.
Yeah. It's my pleasure being here.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. And everybody, thanks for watching. Make sure to follow us on the Cloud Cover Show, and we'll see you next time.